Oh, it didn't do the blog talk. Anyway, thank you for joining us on Future of Our Children's Radio. We'd like to thank Brian Kinder, Randy Davis, Cheyenne Davis, and Neil Shelton for allowing us to have this format. We're opening up a brand new show for you tonight. Team up with Deanna and Chris, and we're going to talk about several subjects in the upcoming weeks. And right now, Deanna, I think you have a disclaimer you want to do.
Yep, we wanted to let you know that we do not have any degrees, an attorney or a lawyer, and we do not practice law in any federal or state court system. The information provided is based on our personal research and experience. Any information provided is not intended to be legal advice under any state or federal law. We provide research into documentation creation and written strategies. All opinions we make regarding any political official or body of government are non-professional personal opinions.
And thank you. And we have Alan Davis, who is going to open us up with a prayer this evening.
Thank you, Chris, and Dina, and Randall, for this opportunity to pray for you and your efforts to bring justice, relief, and comfort to many hurting people. I commend your desire to share information that's been helpful to you. There's no doubt that God wants families to have both a mother and a father. Ideally, of course, there would be no separation or divorce, but we have to face the situation that's before us and try to make it better. So let's open in prayer for grace and mercy to our all-knowing, all-powerful God. Heavenly Father, I come to you this evening in the name of your Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, asking for you to intercede in the lives of these hurting men and women and children. I don't ask you for justice, because who then could stand before you in your perfect righteousness and holiness and claim to be unspoiled? Instead, Father, I ask you for grace and mercy for all involved, for Chris, Dina, and Randall, and for all those participating in this information roundtable tonight. Mercy, we know, is not getting the due consequences of all the past choices we and others have made. Grace is undeserved favor for you, even beyond mercy, for you pour out your blessings in abundance upon us. We know most of us have made poor or worse choices in the past. So I ask for the sacrificial blood of your Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, to clear the way for these blessings, for families to be reunited as you intended, and for the judges of our human courts to be guided and ruled by you, who are the supreme and sovereign judge of the universe. I pray that you will get much glory from these discussions and the consequent decisions, including the court decisions that will be made. So I pray that you will guide now all that's covered in this blog, both the information going out, the questions, and the answers that are given. I pray all this, Heavenly Father, in the matchless name of your Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
And amen. Thank you, Alan, for that. If you want to call in, the number is 516-387-1481. And I guess, Chris, you're going to open us up this evening with a little bio about yourself, and I guess what you're looking to get out of this show in the upcoming weeks.
My name's Chris Radloff. I'm from the western part of Michigan. I'm in my late 40s. I've been dealing with the family court for 20-plus years. When I was a young child, my parents gave me up at a very young age, and I lived my life through the system, group homes, foster homes, juvenile lockups. As I got a little bit older and into the system, I seen how money would change hands through the custody battles of whichever placement would have me. I've been in plus different places. After I got out of those, I ended up getting married, and at a very young age, at 20 years old and 21, I had a son. And me and her did not make it. I went through the courts in West Virginia, and the magistrate told me after we separated, I went to try to get visitation of him, and the magistrate told me, well, he doesn't know if you're there or not, so it doesn't really matter, and he gave me 7 hours of visitation until I was able to take it to court. It took me about a year and a half to be able to afford the money to be able to go through the courts to get a lawyer. And I never seen the inside of a courtroom. All I know is the last hearing that we had had is the lawyers came out and they was like, well, this is what you got. And they gave me supervised visitation, and it was $35 an hour back in 95, 96. And there was no way I could afford that. I had to drive 80 miles one way to go see him, plus the $35 an hour. And I got to see him a couple times, and the last time I had seen him, they peeled him off of me, kicking him. He was kicking and screaming, my daddy, my daddy, my daddy. And he didn't want to go back with his mom, and I told him I'd see him in 2 more weeks, and that was actually the last time that I see him. Then I didn't know about all the corruption that was going on, and so I didn't know to fight. I fought for another year, year and a half, and it just seemed like an endless battle. And everybody kept telling me, oh, you'll see him. He'll come back to you. You'll see him. So I just waited throughout the years, and after I just had another son born back in 2013, and me and his mother didn't make it a month after he was born. We split up, and wasn't too long after that, my other boy's mother had gotten a hold of me, which after not speaking to her for over 20 years, and my oldest boy wants nothing to do with me. He doesn't understand that he's mad at me because his mom kidnapped him from me and alienated him from me. So in 2013, when me and my youngest boy's mother split up, I really still didn't know. It was a bad breakup. We started in the beginning. I was able to see him, but I felt it was on her terms. And I kept receiving in the courts. What I kept recognizing was the courts were keeping us apart from each other to do what's best for our child. And we weren't allowed to talk to each other. And went through that for about 7 months, 8 months. And I kept receiving him. He had all these marks on him and bruises. He would come to me with black eyes, and the courts were telling me to do one thing. So I would call CPS, and it made his mother mad, and she just completely took him from me. So that's when I ended up having to go for custody. And then my lawyer lied to me, stirred up a big hornet's nest, and it just went on from there. About a year and a half old he was, and me and her decided to try it again, and we tried it. It didn't work. Things got really bad, and I ended up getting a charge against me and going to jail for 6 months. And when I came out, that's when I decided to start learning the law and the ins and the outs of the legal system and the family courts and finding out what was going on and stuff. And that's about the time that I talked to you for the first time, Randall. And ever since then, I've been going in and out of the courts. And here over the last 7 months, 8 months, I started really seeing where the courts were telling her one thing and telling me another thing to keep us to where we were at each other's throat constantly so the courts could make money. And finally, me and her talked for the first time, and now it's, what, 7 months later. I was actually over at her house all day today having a cookout and being with my son, and we're doing what's best for my child. So what I'm trying to get out of this show is I want people to know how corrupt the system is and how much money switches hands and how it switches hands and why the laws are the way they are and why they do the things that they do to these parents. So that's pretty much what I'm trying to get across to people, and I want to get out of the show. I want to hear other people's stories. And, you know, it's like Dina said, she did a disclaimer. We're not lawyers, but we are people who have studied. And, you know, we don't always have the right answers. But, you know, if I can help one person get back to seeing their child, it makes it all worth it to me. So right now I'm one of the very fortunate and lucky ones. Everything is being taken out of the courts as of the 13th of June. Everything will be completely out of the courts. And we are moving ahead in a very, very good pace to do what's best for our son. So with that being said, does anybody have any questions?
Okay. If anybody has any questions whatsoever, you press 1 on your keyboard. Press 1 and you'll be put into the queue and we'll get you up. And you can ask some questions and have some discussions. Deanne, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and what you're about?
All right. Well, first of all, my name is Dina, but it's okay. You can call me Deanna. And my last name is Colostra. So I have been in the family court system since 1999. I try not to go back to 20 years of BS. I like to kind of stay in reality to where I'm at. But my ex-spouse was more mentally abusive, and then once I left, got divorced, and he became physically abusive. And just kind of went through a lot with him. He ended up getting custody of my children. I couldn't fight. I was tired and exhausted and thought it was just from dealing with him and dealing with the children's anger and the manipulation and, you know, just the parental alienation he was doing with them. And probably about 6 to 9 months later, I found out that I had mold in my apartment and I was pretty sick, and a mold specialist rated my apartment a category 3, which means it was detrimental to my health and I could have died in the thing. So once I got into that, and about that time I had finished with my degree, I have a bachelor's degree in human services. And the whole reason I got that degree was because I knew I was going to be starting a business. I didn't want to really start a nonprofit organization, and I wanted to be able to help parents. And early on in this, I decided that I didn't want to do what everybody else was doing. I wanted to try and find other ways to kind of do things and think outside the box, and I've definitely done a lot of that. So I've been in the system for over 18 years. I've done demonstrations. I've done protests. I've been to Washington a couple times. We've marched around Washington. So I can tell you a lot of stuff about the advocacy things I've done. When my ex-spouse got custody of my kids, everybody kept telling me to follow the money trail, to follow the money trail. And I'm not one to sit in a corner and just cry. So I started investigating. And I found a lot of corruption with the family court. I found out that my ex-spouse purchased custody of my children. I have learned how to advocate for myself. I've learned how to get news out. You don't need the news media. I know the media doesn't report on any of this stuff, but you in reality don't even need the news media these days and time. I started a website for non-custodial moms. Mine was the third one at the time. It was in 2008. I'd finished getting my degree. I spent probably 12-hour days getting that website up and going. And to make the long story short, I kind of took it a little political. I got a little crazy with it. I started exposing corruption on it. And there's no way I could sell anything or turn it into a business because I would have been sued and I never would have made any money. So after that, I shut that all down. And I realized when custody was being sold that it wasn't a mother-father thing anymore, that it was mothers and fathers that was going. It wasn't like mothers, non-custodial moms were going through this, and it was because of dad. I realized that custody is being sold to the highest bidder. And at that point, that's when I decided I was going to be for moms and dads. I was no longer just for moms. I shut my website down. I moved out of the state, kind of wanted to revamp things, was going to start a behavioral health magazine, and then I had some health issues go on, so I couldn't do that. And then I decided I was going to start a blog called Cases and realized that I couldn't do that because I had a lot of stuff where I was talking about corruption and I would end up getting sued. So I do have a blog that kind of sits there, and I have a Facebook page called Cases, which stands for Court Association. Let's see. Court Association. Oh, shoot. I can't remember what it stands for. But anyways, basically what I'm doing right now is I'm hooking up links to, like, corruption of attorneys, guardian ad litem, judges, and putting the information up there. And if you go through that, you'll be able to start kind of connecting, putting together how they're selling custody and how they're doing the things that they're doing. Then I started being a divorce coach. I moved to Texas because that's the number one state for divorce, and it's also the number one state for entrepreneurs. And I was there for 5 weeks when Hurricane Harvey came through, and I had to relocate back to my home state of Michigan. I tend to move around a whole lot, so probably telling you where I'm at is probably going to change in a month or so. I also change up my hair color and my looks because a lot of people know me, and I've been followed and things like that. So what I did was I created a couple products. I wanted women of domestic violence to be able to represent themselves at any point in time. So I created the Family Court Journal. Then when I was going through my divorce, I would sit down and I would write out on a notepad, and stuff was long and crazy, and if I went back through it, it was hard to go through it to pull stuff out for motions. So I'm like, I got to do something that's quicker and easier. So I created the Family Court Journal. And I have used this so many times. It's been great. I can use it if I want to do a press release, if I want to file a motion. And I've used it if I've reported against the agency or things like that. I ended up writing another book last year called Exposing the Fat Rat. And that talks about pretty much my investigating and how I investigated and exposed the corruption that I had found. And I've decided now that what I'm going to do is you can't purchase those. And I created a 4-week course for the Represent Yourself in Family Court to teach other people how to represent themselves. I did this for 18 years. I found ways to do it quicker, faster, easier, simpler. When I represented myself, I couldn't believe how easy it was. And I spent $20,000 to get divorced from with a lying attorney who just basically lied to me all the time. And then I created another course on how to expose the corruption. I'm still in the process of working on that and getting that together because I want to teach people how to investigate and how to represent themselves. So once in a while, I'll probably be doing giveaways, and I'll be giving away the court journal or the books that I've kind of written. And you can get those for free, but you're going to have to probably sign up for them. So my passion is to work with women in domestic violence. And I was at a kind of like a secondhand I'm not sure what it's called, like an auction. And I was noticing that nobody was taking these huge stuffed animals or little stuffed animals. And I thought, wow, what can I do with those? And I was like, you know, I could sell those and make money for them. And so I decided to start a business called Used and Abused Now Love. And I sell stuffed animals that are refurbished on eBay, and the proceeds go to help women of domestic violence either obtain or retain custody of their kids. A lot of people don't know that this is happening. So it also helps to bring light to how abusive fathers are gaining custody in the family court system. Then in 2011, I decided I wanted to start Non-Custodial Mother's Day, but I haven't really promoted it a whole lot. And I started a blog this year, and I'm really going to promote it. It's on October 28th. There's a little story, kind of like how I picked the date on it. So if you wanted to go on the blog and read about it, you could do that. I am in the process of trying to save up $1,000 so I can get a nonprofit status with the Used and Abused Now Loved, and so I'm working on that. And then I decided at one point in time I had kind of did this and it failed, and I thought, oh, I think I can do this on Blogger. So I wanted to take a place where anybody else who has created businesses or a product to help other people in the family court, where people could go to one place, or parents could go to one place for getting help and getting assistance and someone who's been through the process. So I started Team Up Against Parents. I couldn't get that name on the blog, so I believe it's teamupagainstcorruption.blogspot.com. And so I've been listing businesses that can help other people. If you have an event going or if you start a group, I can put that information on the blog as well. I met Randall probably like 6 weeks ago, and he suggested I do a blog talk radio show. I was like, well, I don't know about that. We were mentioning something on a post, and Chris says, hey, I want to do the blog talk radio show with you. So here we are. We started the blog talk radio show. I really want to talk about getting people out, doing things, advocacy groups going. I also want to do some controversy things. If you read anything that's on my blog, you'll see that I don't have, like, normal articles. I kind of write different articles that are up there that you can read. And so that's our biggest thing. If we want to talk about what's going on, the corruption, we want to create some controversy. I'm not afraid of controversy. I really don't care what people do and don't like about me or what they think about me, because the way I look at it is, you're not paying my bills and you're not my boss. So until you're paying my bills or you're my boss, I really don't care what your opinions and thoughts are. And I'm a scrapper, so we can argue all day long if you would like to. But, Randall, you're going to stop me from doing that, correct?
I don't know about that. Everybody and most people within the movement know me. I am not the shy type. And I usually create more controversies because I believe we need to unite. We need to share this. That's why I started Today's Voice Radio. .net. You can go in there. I have several hosts, and this show will be aired on that program as well as Future of Our Children. It's 24-hour talk radio. I have everything from family courts to veterans to abuse survivors, probate courts, whistleblowers. So if you want to know, if you like talk radio, todaysvoiceradio.net. But it's basically the same thing. It's uniting groups. It's uniting show hosts. It's uniting resources. And Deanna's blog is up there. In fact, I think she has two blogs up there. So you can go in there and see her blogs. There's a quick shortcut for you. I run Estranged Parents and Grandparents. And we advocate for 50-50, and I know a lot of people don't like that. In fact, we've had a discussion on that, so we'll probably get into that at some point in time. I advocate for a repealing no-fault divorce, getting the family unit back together. I believe we need to reach out to the veterans and grandparents because the children hurt. I don't care what we've been taught. We've always been taught, you know, children will get over it. They'll get over it. And I just watched a show on 2020 last night, Secret Siblings, where they took twins and they forcibly separated them. And even at 6 months old, the children were going through trauma, and it's documented that they were going through trauma when they were separated. So I don't care whether it's from another sibling, a parent, or anything like that. The kids are the ones that suffer in all of this.
Absolutely.
I guess, you know, Chris, you brought up some alienation stuff, but both of you have brought up the corruption and the money transferring. So why don't we use that for our subject matter tonight? And like I said, if anybody has a question, comment, or wants to get in on a discussion, press 1 on your keyboard, and we'll get you into the queue. So, Chris, why don't you tell us some about the money that you've seen as a child and then some that you saw as an adult.
Okay. Kind of started out when I was 8 years old. My parents gave me up and put me in an institution. My mom's kind of flipped her wig, so she, what they call hyperactivity or ADHD, that's what they tried diagnosing me with, and my mother just couldn't handle me just being a boy. So they put me in a home, and I was very young, and then from there, it just kept going. I could just never make it back to my parents' house. The state had a hold of me, and at that time, I didn't really see what was going on. But it's like Randall, it's like you just said, it affects children, and it affected me. I never committed a crime, but they kept transferring me from place to place, state to state. And I was angry. I was hurt. And I didn't know that's what I was dealing with at that young age, because you just don't know. I was being abused. I was never sexually abused at that time. But I was being physically abused. I've still got scars on my body to this day because of them. Some of them's covered up with my tattoo, so you can't see them. But then as I got older, I remember one particular group home I was at in Grove City, Pennsylvania. I seen some papers fly in front of me, and I went up there from West Virginia. I was only supposed to be there from 3 to 6 months, and 18 months later, I was still there. And I happened to see these papers fly in front of me, and it was an accident that they did it. And I'm wanting to say I was like 15, 16 years old, and I seen that this group home was making $280-some a day off of me. And from where they had been verbally telling me that I was only supposed to be there from 3 to 6 months just for a diagnostic to figure out what they needed to do with me.
Chris, right there, you know, you mentioned 200 and how much a day?
$280-some a day back in the 80s.
Okay, well, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to make sure we got a time limit in there, because $280 in the 80s was a lot more than it is right now.
Yeah. It was, I know I was there in 88 and part of 89 and a little bit of 87. So after I seen that, the papers fly in front of me and said I was supposed to be there 3 to 6 months, what they were, actually I didn't see that on the papers, what they told me, because at that age, when you run away from someplace because you're being abused, they put you on probation. So I literally spent 10 years on probation from almost 8 years old until I was 18. And, but it said that I was supposed to be there until I was 18 years of age. And I was upset. And I ended up, I don't know what you'd call it. I got mad, and I was cussing and yelling, and I ended up getting restrained by 6 or 7 full-grown men. And I remember in the bottom of the pile, as he was trying to hold me, I ended up getting loose somehow, and I came up out of the pile, and I hit one of them. And so they did a restraint on me, and they put me in this place that I was in, it was huge. It was like if you drive through it, it looks like a city. They have their own school, and it's just for boys. They have their own school. They have their own farms. They have their inside, indoor, outdoor pools. They have their own stores, and there's over 1,500 kids in here. You drive through it, the houses look just like if you drive through somewhere residential here in Michigan. You would really never know that that's what it was unless you've seen the sign or you just lived around there. But so they had their own on-site detention center for the boys in there. Well, after I hit this gentleman, because of the anger, they put me in that detention center, and I was sitting there, well, I think I was there for like 45 days, and just one day they told me to pack up my stuff, and they drove me down to West Virginia, which is about a four-hour drive, and they had all my stuff with me, and they took me inside to my probation officer's office with all my stuff and said, here he is. Well, next thing I know, my probation officer, which I know this gentleman from a previous group home he used to work at, he puts me in the detention center there in West Virginia. And they were trying to sneak me in through there. I'm not going to go through a whole timeline because my life was a mess. But before I went into that group home, I had a foster dad that wanted to adopt me. The state wouldn't let him adopt me. When they put me in this detention center, the staff at the detention center called this foster dad of mine, and they snuck a call to him. Well, when he called me, he told me he was going to meet me at court the next day. So when I'm in there, we go in front of the judge, and my foster dad brings it up. What they had did is they had put a, what do they call it? They said that I ran away from the group home and went down to West Virginia, a CAPIUS warrant. So that was enough to lock me up and put me someplace else. I never ran away. They drove me down there, dropped me off from my probation officer's office. He said that I ran away, so they put a CAPIUS warrant out on me, which gave them the authority to put me in another. I ended up going to Salem, West Virginia, which is a boys' prison, and I went there. I was supposed to be there for 60 days. I only spent 15 days there because the people at the detention center told them they wanted me back because they knew what was going on. And I wish I could say names of the people to help save me from that, but it was just a money thing. They were making so much money off of me. They just kept shipping me from group home to group home, and that's when I started realizing what was going on. They were just making so much money off of me. They wouldn't have let my foster dad adopt me. He was a great guy. There was no reason. I never had any issues, but they would always make issues to be able to get me out of his place. And it was just, it's horrible what they put these kids through, the abuse, the neglect. I don't even know how to explain it. I mean, I don't know how I made it through all them years with the abuse that I went through. I mean, one of the worst ones I was in Lowell, Michigan. It was a Christian group home, and I've never been so abused in my life, you know. And you tell people about it, and everybody's, oh, it's not happening, and or they just didn't care. I don't know. But that's how I kind of figured out that there was money, is back in the 80s when I seen that paper go in front of me, and that's when I realized that they were just making so much money off of me that they couldn't afford to get rid of me because it was an easy dollar on me.
Now, Chris, your story is interesting because I worked in a Level 3 facility with girls, and then I did a year in the middle of the forest at a boys' camp. Oh, wait, the boys' camp was a Level 3. The girls' facility was a Level 4. And we're trained that when we do a takedown or anything that we do, we have certain programs that we have to go through. We're trained through so that when we take children down, we don't hurt them. Now, when I was in the boys' camp, though, I had staff that was hurting kids. It was really hard. There's times I had to just go sit down and be by myself and calm down for a minute.
the boys were retaliating, and they were rioting and would take over the campus, and they would get sticks, they would pull stuff off from the cabin, and they were going after staff. They would have to call the police. The police would come in, but the director wouldn't let them be arrested, because if you arrest them and they sit down and say, what's going on? And they say, oh, well, this staff did this and this staff did that. You know, that's not going to look good. So instead they're like, no, just bring them back. They would maybe ship one to another facility that was with the company. You know, and so I kept waiting for Child Protective Services to show up, and Child Protective Services never showed up. But I did maybe a 10-minute little research on the company and the owner, and I already know that the judge is pretty much bought. It's in the pocket. I already knew it. I was like, I didn't have to research, but maybe 5-10 minutes. So I already know what was going on and what was happening. And so I just covered my ass, and I have notes that I've taken. I was written up. What I was written up for, I actually have days, dates, and times of the director and managers and security doing all the same thing. And they tell you when you when you're in training to treat these boys like they're your own, like you would your own kids. And then when you do, you're written up. And so I just made sure I covered my little hiney. And if I needed to, I could back myself up. And if I needed to go to court, I could do that. And they pretty much found out, and they just pretty much left me alone, let me finish out my year, and I was done.
Yeah, I
One of the things I learned, though, that was interesting is, I guess I kind of knew it, but it wasn't really conscious to me. But you have sex offenders, kids who are younger who are sex offenders. You've got kids who are violent. You've got kids who have stolen things, broken into houses, and they're put in these facilities. And then you have kids who's in the foster care system goes into the same place. Now, some of these kids' parents might have been great parents, but they're smoking weed. And I understand, I know how the Child Protective Services works, and because you're smoking weed, it's not a reason to take your child from you. You know, if you're taking care of your child and you're smoking a weed, you know, you're fine. So I've seen kids who, you know, were pretty shy, pretty quiet, you know, and they're in there and they're just losing their mind and going ballistic that they can't take it anymore. They can't take the violence. They just can't do this. And I had to, like, walk away because I just couldn't watch it happening. I also learned how many female sexual predators there really are out there. And we had one child, and I figured it out. His mother was pimping him out to her friends, older friends, for drugs and alcohol. And, I mean, this has got to be happening other places, and it's got to be pretty widespread. But those are just some things that I've learned in these facilities. And it's just, I mean, you can't get anybody to go in and investigate because they don't really have a whole lot of facilities. So they don't want to shut a facility down, so they just kind of overlook things.
Well, there's a lot of
now
money being made. Go ahead, Randall.
You were just saying that you had investigated the judges. How many of those judges had stock or ownership or affiliation with these groups? Because we've researched the supervised visitation facilities and found out that many of the judges that give you supervised visitation are ownerships in the businesses where you do the supervised visitation. So how much of that have you found out about?
Well, I know personally one of the group homes that I was in was named after the judge that I had to go in front of. So that right there tells you that he had stock in it, and that that's why he was putting kids in there, because he was making money off of that. It was named after his name, you know?
It sounds like the kid for cash scheme that was going on with those judges in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get that in-depth into researching this behavior health camp for boys. But I know that, you know, the judge was passing all these cases from Child Protective Services right to this company. And I knew that, you know, pretty much they were in each other's pockets. It was pretty much, I mean, I could read between the lines, and I was like, oh, I already got where this is going.
Well, you were talking about, like, some of the abuse and sexual abuse like some of these women do. I know that there was one time I was 13 years old, and you said that these staff members are specially trained to handle these boys and stuff. You look at me now, I'm a pretty big guy, but back then I may have weighed a 105 soaking wet, and I remember this guy was like 6'3", 6'4", knocked me out, punched me in the face, and knocked me out. Well, when I came to, I went and laid down in my bed, and this was at the home that was named after the judge. Well, when I went to bed about 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm woken by two officers, and they come in there, and they arrested me for battery, and they said that I attacked this man, which I never did. So then they send me next door to the detention center, which is also named after this judge. And that's the people that helped get me. They helped me. I got to admit, the people that were running this place, they knew the corruption that were going on in there. I was a regular in that detention center because of I was a high money purse kid for them, or however you want to say it. So, like, the abuse, I know that goes on. The sexual abuse, I know as I got a little older in a couple other group homes, I personally had, I don't know which, escapades with a couple of the younger female staff members. You know, when I was 16, 17, they would have female staff members that were 19, 20, 21 years old working in there. And there would be sexual stuff going on in there. The corruption is just, it goes from one extreme to the other. I mean, the abuse, I mean, yeah, at that age, them girls shouldn't have been in there. They were probably just in there for the hot boys, you know. And the beatings that I took, the money that was being exchanged. I mean, I could tell you about my whole life story, but an hour and a half ain't going to be enough time. And a lot of people wonder how I made it through being as sane as what I am. And it's just horrible what these kids go through. And with my youngest boy now, the reason I fought so hard is because I can't bear the thought of him going through something like that. I just can't bear that thought. So we got to do something about this because it's horrible. It's horrible what they're doing to these children.
Well, the reason why it's mostly female staff in these facilities, and the reason for that is because they don't pay a lot of wage. So a lot of men won't take this type of job. So it's a lot of women who are actually doing these jobs. Plus, women like to work with kids. And you know, when I was at the level 4 facility with girls, I had a male staff, and he backed up into a girl, and he freaked out, you know, that he was going to be in trouble. And I was like, dude, I watched it. You're fine. You're on camera. You're good. Don't worry about it. But he was literally freaked out because he backed into some girl that she might, you know, make some kind of allegations or whatever against him. When I was in this camp for boys, I was 45. I had 15-year-olds try and kiss me. I had 17-year-olds say that they wanted to have sex with me. I had a kid trying to break into a staff cabin because I was in there and he was going to do me. And I am like, it was just crazy. I'm like, I'm 45. You know, my kids are older than all the kids that were in there. And it was just really interesting. But you did get some kids who were 17, almost 18. And they're big kids, look like they're 21, 22. You know, and then sometimes when they get to fighting, and I mean, we were in the gym, we had 3 or 4 boys fighting, we had blood everywhere, they're spitting at each other, and where's our security?
Mm-hmm. There is
I
no.
mean, and, go ahead.
I just said there is no security.
Well, we had kind of like what was called a security, but of course that was more women, and they couldn't get a lot of people, and I figured out what it was because they paid you a bonus to go there, and if you left before the year was out, you had to pay your bonus back. So I figured out what happens is people get hired in, they get their bonus, they work their year, and I thought as soon as spring comes again, when I had started, I'm like, you know what, they're going to be short on staff, they're not going to have – they were having on the weekends, they wouldn't have enough staff, and they were combining kids in cabins because they didn't have enough staff. Some of the kids were going on, like, weekend visitations to family members. So they were, you know, adding younger kids in with older kids and, you know, of course, things that are going to happen there. So that's kind of what they were doing. And then they had staff coming from a good 3 hours away to come and work the weekend. From the time they left their city or their building to the time they went back home, whether they were sleeping or whatever they were doing, they were getting paid. And I don't know how this place was staying afloat if they're paying people like that. It didn't make any sense to me. I had a new coworker that came in. They made him a supervisor, and they gave him like a $6,000 bonus. I'm like, how can you give a $6,000 bonus to someone? And
now,
I still keep in touch with friends back there. The boys are still riding. The city or the county that this is happening in, they're fed up. They're like, we want to gate around this. We're done with this. So the facility has now decided that they're going to not take boys over the age of 15. But you still have boys at the age of 15 who are riding. So I don't think that's going to solve their problem. But nobody's going in and looking at the real problem and solving it.
Yeah, but you brought up an interesting point. They don't want to pay you in the first place, but yet they're paying out all these bonuses. What were the administrator salaries? And then if, you know, which that has been the excuse with child services, CPS, even the Medicaid and all of these funded organizations, they keep saying, we don't have any money, we don't have any money, we don't have any money. Where is the $20 to $260 billion that they paid out in 2012? I mean, these numbers just don't add up to the salaries and the excuses that are being put out there. It's like child support. You have a father paying a dollar in child support, but you're collecting when a state collects from child support, they collect $10 to $15 from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Where does
yep.
it make sense to make dad go into debt, go into all these and live on ramen soup to quote unquote support his child, but yet the state's collecting $10 to $15. Why don't the state just pay the dollar and let everybody go on their merry way? It's like you. Where are they paying these bonuses and have you on such a small salary? And where, you know, in other words, the arithmetic doesn't add up when you look into. We don't have the money. We don't have the money.
Let's go to the child support, because what happens with child support is the judge gets a kickback, the federal government, and I don't know what the figure is. I don't know if it's like 10 cents on a dollar, whatever it is. So that money goes to the judge's 401k. So he wants you to pay the most amount of child support that he can get you to pay, and he wants to collect that, because when that happens, he then is going to have a nice 401k sitting when he retires. So that's part of the reason why child support is crazy and so high, and people are like, I don't get this. They're basing it off on what you can make, not what you do make. That's what they did to me. Yeah, when the economy took a dump, they kind of started changing that. I'm like, well, we can't really do that because, I mean, I didn't work for 2 years in Michigan because there weren't any jobs, and all I could get was an $8 an hour job. I have a $65,000 student loan that I got in 2008, and I haven't paid a dime on it. I'm supposed to be making $52,000 a year and still haven't seen $52,000 a year.
Yeah, when I first went through family court, it was a couple months, or actually months before that, before me and her actually split up, I was making around $60,000, $65,000 a year driving truck. Well, then right before my son was born, I switched jobs, and I went to $15 an hour, which that's a huge cut. And when I ended up taking her to court, they charged me $850 a month like I was still making that $65,000 a year. And even they said, they was like, well, this is what you could make. But that's not the point. That's not what I was making. I ended up losing my home and everything because of that. It's ridiculous. It's the Title 4D Social Security Act that gives these judges incentive to raise this child support to ungodly amounts.
Yeah, I'm going back to the budgeting of these places. And like I said, when you look into the administrators, you know, an average worker gets probably $30,000. Same thing with our school. Our teachers are getting $36,000 a year. And the school administrator is making $150,000. You know, it's not coordinated. When we get into these government organizations, I don't care what your arguments are about why they can't do this and why they can't do this and why they're not up here, you know. But when you look at the budgeting and when you look at what it actually costs, you know, how can an administrator of a home justify $150,000 a year with, you know, probably a $75,000 a year expense budget so they can go to these conferences and then say, well, you know, or like you said, they were shipping them in from other states. You have to pay transportation. You have to pay per diem. You have to pay the overtime. And you can't pay your staff a decent salary to get decent people into these homes.
Yeah, I know the people that they had working in most of the homes that I had, they were lucky if they had GEDs. They didn't have no education. They didn't have no psychology or anything like that. These were just regular Joe Smoes off the street, and they were just trying to fill positions, paying them measly wages.
Yeah, now you actually have to have a degree and you can't have a criminal background and blah, 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 which, you know, it's kind of hard to find people who do that nowadays. I mean, without a, you know, whatever going on. But they try their hardest to do that.
And that's not always true because I still find states that all you have to do is have a associate's degree, and it's just an associate's degree. You can have associate's degree in art. You can have associate's degree in music. How does that help you with a kid? I mean, each state's different as follows their qualifications. And, you know, many states are upgrading, but most of them are not when you look
state
by state.
Well, you can have a degree in music and help kids because they would just say music therapy. The facilities that I have worked in, you've had to have a bachelor's degree, which I have, and they run background checks on you. I get my background, you know, they run my background all the time, but they're not paying, you know, they're not hardly paying any wages. I mean, I went to a job and they wanted to pay me $10 an hour, and I looked at them and I said, you know, I could make in 2 days driving Uber what you want to pay me 40 hours a week. Why would somebody go work 40 hours a week when they can work 2 days driving Uber and make the same amount of money? It doesn't even make any sense.
And don't have to deal with the stress.
Exactly.
So where is all this money going?
Because
I'll tell you from being on the inside, the money's not going towards the kids. I know this from the inside. I may have every 8 or 9 months had a clothing voucher, and like it might be a $50 voucher, and you got to buy your socks, your underwear, your jeans, and your shirt that you're going to wear for the next 8 months. You know,
yep.
I had no family in there pitching in money. We had nasty meals. I mean, we didn't have good meals. You know, the amount of money that they spend on these places, like the one in Pennsylvania that I was in, It was phenomenal. Like I said, this was like a town that you would drive in. And as they had me in the diagnostic unit, they were building the other building that they were going to put me in, which was called Special Needs. And that building had, I'm wanting to say, 10 different bedrooms. Each house with one kid. It had its own school room in it. And it had a huge, I'm talking huge, gymnasium in it. And the amount of money they spend on that stuff, but nothing's going to the kids. I mean, and I can't say, like I went to school every day while I was there for a year and a half, but when it came time for me to graduate high school, they said I didn't have enough credits to graduate high school. So I wasn't even getting the education that I needed. You know, so I 3 weeks before graduation, I was devastated when they told me that, well, you weren't going to graduate. So I had to go get my GED.
Why? And there's another thing is when we found this out with CPS when Randy Davis attacked under FERPA, they were getting paid three different times. Basically, instead of one kid, they were getting paid for three kids, even though it was only one kid, because they'd register them under the Disability Act, they'd render them the special needs in education, and they'd register them under himself or themselves as a regular child. So they were getting paid three different times for this one child. And you just mentioned it. You knew of a $280 a month check, and it doesn't sound like much. Or did you say by the day or month?
But that was by the day, and that was back in 1987.
Yeah, but you figure it out. If they're getting paid $280, even if you paid a salary of $100 a day, you still got $180 to dispense for food, clothes, and everything per day. So we really needed an audit on a lot of these programs. And you talked about child support, the judge getting paid, but even under CPS they get paid. The judge's retirement fund gets paid when they remove the child. The judge's retirement fund gets paid again if they can force that kid into an adoption.
Well, see, and here's the unfortunate part for me. Why wouldn't they let me be adopted? Well, the only thing I can assume now at my age is because they were making so much money shipping me out of state and shipping me to these different places, adoption would have only been a one-time fee, and then it would have been done and over with. Instead, they could make constant money on me if they wouldn't let me be adopted and kept me in these group homes, kept me in these foster homes. They're getting paid every day. But when you're adopted, it's a one-time payment, you're done. Someone owns you now. You got a family, should I say.
Now, I want to talk about the education in these facilities because we had 11 to 12 kids to a cabin. They're all in the same class together, but they're all at different levels. So they can't have electronics because they'll throw them, whip them, break them. So there's no electronics. They have to have books, which, they'll rip those, throw those, whatever. But you can't really test them. You can't really, you can't get on the computer and do testing with them because you can't take them into the computer because they'll throw chairs and put a chair through the computer, So you're trying to get the kids to learn on top of the fact that they've got behaviors and they're beating the shit out of each other. And what I didn't get is kids are in a behavioral health facility and they have counseling 1 hour a week. Don't you think it'd be like every day for an hour? And I would write up my notes and I had a teacher that would come in and she says, I love it when you work. First thing I do is read your notes. I know everything that happened in that cabin while you were in it. And I mentioned this to the counselors, and they're like, well, we're in meetings all day. We don't have time to read the notes. And I'm like, but you would know exactly what happened and what was going on with each one of these kids if you were reading my notes. So that didn't make any sense. We had the food was the director wouldn't eat the food. And I always told the kids, if you're eating food and you start feeling funny, stop eating it because it's going to make you sick. And we had a boy, he was 17, he was probably 200 pounds. And for snack, they gave him a package of carrots that was probably like 2 inches by 2 inches. And I looked at him and I said, really? This is what you get for a snack? And he said, yeah, sometimes I don't even bother because it's not even worth it. He's like, I could eat 20 bags of these. And I was like, yeah, I know. And then the staff would feel bad for the kids, and they would go out, and do you know how much money? I haven't even done my taxes yet, but I can imagine the money I spent on these kids, buying them food, stuff to do projects with, games to play with them. I mean, staff would buy that stuff. And we had a bookshelf one time, and the staff had a bunch of stuff, games that she had bought for the kids. Kid got mad, licked it, knocked it over, threw stuff all around. And then when he had to pick it up, he picked it all up and just threw it in the garbage. And there went all of her stuff. And she packed up all of her stuff, and she took it home. And she's like, I won't bring another thing here. So, you know, the staff would bring in food. And if you bring in food, you have to give it to all of the kids. But if the kids are decided that they're going to call me a bitch, I'd be like, oh, okay. I was like, go ahead, call me bitch. Kids would come out their room. No, don't call her bitch. Don't call her bitch. Because you know what's happened? They were going to get the cookies I brought that night. They were going to get, you know, whatever I brought. It's like, because I'm not giving that kid something that I brought because he's going to disrespect me and call me a bitch. And if I can't give it to him, I can't give it to any of them. So then all the boys would suffer. And that's the thing that would happen is they would have things put in place for these kids, and two of them would ruin it for the rest of them, or the rest of them would get to go on an event, and the other two are going to stay back and destroy the cabin, so, oh, we better let them go too. Then the ones who are on task are going, well, wait, we've done what we're supposed to be doing. We're on task. These two have been nothing but fucktards the entire time, and now all of a sudden they get to go, and they get rewarded, and we've been trying to do. So, you know, then the kids are like, what's the sense of being good? And I'm looking at them going, you're right. What is the sense of being good if the people who aren't being good are getting rewarded just the same?
Anybody have any questions, comments, or wants to get in on the discussion, press 1 on your keyboard, and we'll get you into the discussion. Just press 1 on your keyboard. That'll let us know that you want to get in on the discussion. Sorry about that. Go ahead. Sorry for interrupting you.
No, that's fine. Now, another thing, when I left this facility last year, and I'm still hearing it going on, is CPS is taking children from homes. They don't even have a place to put them. They're putting children in the emergency room where they're sleeping at night for up to 2 weeks. They're putting them in the office of a CPS worker. I mean, how do you go in and take a kid and not even have a place for that child to go, and you're just going to put them in an emergency room and let them sleep there for 2 weeks? I mean, how crazy is that? That doesn't even make any sense, and it doesn't even seem like it would be legal, but they're doing it.
And they're making this sound like this is better than being at home with their parents?
Apparently. If you've got a parent, you know, who's getting high, oh, we better take that kid, even though, you know, they're taking care of the kid, they're buying them stuff, their house is clean, you know. I mean, the whole reasons to take children away isn't even being enforced. And then they want to come in because somebody made an allegation that that they thought you were getting high at your house. They want to come in and swab your mouth. And if you don't let them swab your mouth, they will say that's a violation and we're going to come take your kids. And we'll take your kids because you refuse to let them swab your mouth, which you have every right to. It's against all your rights. But if you don't let them swab your mouth, they're like, we'll just take the kids.
Well, that's going to be another issue with how they violate our constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, I mean, they trample them. It's like the Constitution doesn't even matter anymore, you know.
I just wrote up an article, and it talks about when they come to your door and you're talking to them, you consent with them. The questions that they ask you and you start, I had CPS come to my door. I had no problem. Come on in, told them what was going on, what was happening. What was interesting was when I got the report back, they put stuff in there that wasn't true. They said, this is how I feel. That wasn't how I felt. I didn't feel nothing like that. None of that was going on. But how do you dispute it? Once it's in a report, people can read it. You know, the judge can look at it, but if you never end up going to court, I was put on the central registry because if somebody calls on you, you automatically get put in the central registry. They don't even tell you. My ex had 41 different people call on me and file a complaint against me, people that didn't even know me. And when I would call, because my kids really needed the help and assistance, it's, oh, you're just trying to get back at him. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I'm trying to get back
at him. Yep, I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that.
Yep. But he had 41 different people, strangers, people who didn't know me, all calling on me, and CPS are getting these calls, and they've been in my home, or I had services in my home, you know, trying to get my kids calm and stable because the stuff my ex was doing, it was crazy. I mean, I'm going to tell you, I've literally walked through hell and back with some of the shit I've been through, and it's all from family court. And, you know, when the guardian ad litem goes into court and says, oh, he's a great dad, and I looked at her, I'm like, this bitch is off her rocker. But when I ended up investigating the people in my case and started following the money, I discovered that she was married to the vice president of a bank that my ex-spouse's divorce attorney's law firm was in. And I put two and two together and realized that she sold custody to him. And he purchased custody of my kids through her. And then they concealed my kids from me. And, yep, I paid child support for my kids and wasn't able to see them.
Yeah, see, and that's another thing the courts do. They say that child support and visitation are two separate entities until mm-hmm. a problem arises, and then they throw it together at their convenience and say, well, you didn't pay child support, so you can't see your kid. You know, I mean, there's just so many things that are wrong, so many issues with the family courts. And it's not only family courts. It's all courts. I mean, district, civil.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many issues with the court systems being corrupt. And all someone has to do is say you did something, you know. It's ridiculous. CPS, you made a comment, what are you supposed to do when CPS comes to your door? Well, I film them. I'll put the camera right there in front of them. I've got several interviews on it, and they still lie on paper, even though I got it on camera. They still lie on paper. You know, I had an officer do that. I had the whole incident videotaped, and she went and lied on paper. You know, but and so I know the judge and them didn't look at the videos. They just read what she said. That sounded horrible. Like I read through it, and I was like, "Ooh, why it makes me sound like the devil." But you look at the video, and it shows just the opposite, you know. And that's because they know there's going to be money flowing if they can get these kids away from a parent, you know. And most of the times, though, they'll take a child, give them to the worst parent, because the other parent will keep fighting. And so when you got one parent. Yeah, so when you got one parent that's going to keep spending money in the courts to file motions and do this and do that, that's what they'll do, you know?
Now, they, because I was representing myself, and they made it where they wanted I had to have like a $500 bond or something like that. And whenever I filed a motion, I don't know, it was crazy. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is a court of law. I should be able to go in and represent myself and get the issues resolved, but I could never get the issues resolved. I mean, I have actually written up motions for people who've gone into court, and the judge is like, you wrote this up? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, well, we're just going to dismiss this. But I would walk into court, and every time I turn around, I was screwed. And I got to the point where I would smile, put a smile on my face, and turn around because I thought, y'all going to get something, because they knew it would be a press release. It would be a demonstration. I was going to do something, you know, and they just knew it. They knew I was going to be doing something. So, I mean, it's just crazy. It's just, I mean, they just put all this together, you know, and then I didn't want to go to the Court of Appeals. I kept saying the Court of Appeals is just as corrupt as the lower court. Well, I was on unemployment, and I could do it for free, and so I filed a brief. I filed two different ones, and they accepted one of them, and they accepted the one that had all the cases with my judge, and there was a ruling where it stated that they've reversed several of the judge's orders because she's not applying the law when it comes to custody, and they said that I didn't have any transcripts to show she was biased. And I looked on that opinion that they wrote, and there were three judges. And I looked at the judges on my case, and one of those judges was on my case, you know, and I was like, wait a second. You're a judge who wrote this opinion. You know she's not following the law when she's changing custody, and you're going to tell me that you don't know if she's biased against me or not when she took me off her case saying I was harassing her. So it's all interesting.
From
the top to the bottom.
And right there, let's we've got about 20 minutes left. Why don't you don't go into it in depth, but some of the things you're going to talk about in the future on how you research your judge. And I know one of the things you did was basically legally follow your judge. And we'll call it that so we can stay within the lines. And why don't you talk about some of those things that we're going to talk about in the future about how to follow your judge legally, how to research your judge, and Chris, you too, as far as some of the things that you've learned and we're going to talk about in the future shows.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to what I did is I started calling these judges out. A lot of times they won't let – I ended up firing all my lawyers and going pro per. Everybody keeps telling you go pro se, but if you go pro se, you're going at the same standards as a lawyer, and the judges hold you to that. Even after I would put pro per on my paperwork, the courts would rewrite it pro se, and I would correct them and be like, no, I'm pro per because – now I can be, well, for lack of better terms, stupid, and they have to allow that because I am not a lawyer. I did not go to law school. I don't know the laws. I'm researching this the best that I can. So when I started doing that, I would try filing – or I quit filing motions and started filing demands. And things that I started learning was when they write something back, like I had a referee say that I was this and say that I was that and I was doing this and doing that. Well, if you don't object to those things, and the only way you're going to win is win in court. The biggest thing I learned is not being in court personally. You win through your paperwork. When you learn through, or when you write in, it is automatically submitted. They alter the videos and the audios, so they can make them say pretty much whatever they want. Once it's submitted and you get it stamped as filed, that is, it can't be moved, and they won't. The clerk of the courts have no right to look at your paperwork and tell you whether it can be submitted or not. I showed them the law on that. And told them that if they didn't start submitting my paperwork, I would have them arrested for obstruction of justice. Going in and pro per, I would start filing demands instead of motions. When you file a motion, you're asking the judge and the courts to do you a favor. When you file a demand, you're demanding they do this. I was the plaintiff in my whole case, and they kept trying to switch me around to the defendant, and I wouldn't let them do it. When they write stuff back to you, if you don't object to it, if you don't agree to it, and you don't object, they hold that as truth. So you have to object to it, and you have to do it in written form. I finally got some stuff submitted into my case. I don't know for a fact, but I personally think it scared the judge because he knew that he was going to be accountable if things kept happening. And another thing is the friend of the court was telling my ex, oh, you can't talk with him. You don't need to talk with him. You guys are never going to be able to have a civil conversation. And then they were telling me, well, no, you ain't going to talk to her. So they were keeping a wedge in between us. And it was just a real sickening thing. Come out to that last court hearing, and I was expecting to have a 15-minute meeting before the court hearing, and next thing I know, there's police all over in the court up there, which we've never had an officer in the courtroom to begin with. So I didn't know really what was going on. And my caseworker came out and said, well, we're not going to have the 15-minute meeting. We're just going to go straight to the hearing. And I asked her, why the hell not? And she goes, well, I didn't think you'd want one. And I was like, well, you thought wrong. I said, let's get in there and have this meeting. And we went in there, and all of a sudden, me and my ex talked for the first time in 2 years. And we came up with a visitation plan. I hadn't seen my son in over a year, year and a half. We came up with a visitation plan. Now I'm 7 months into it. I've been having overnights, weekends through the day. Where I, like I said today, I was over at her house for a cookout. They're sitting there telling her one thing, sitting there telling me another to keep a wedge at us. You know, you got to learn when they're playing one against the other because they're making money, and it's a really sick and twisted game that they're playing, and they're playing with it with our children. That's what the horrible part is. So I would like to get some of the knowledge out there that what I did may not work for everybody, but, you know, my main thing was to get my son back in my life and get to seeing my son. And when I started objecting and submitting and filing demands instead of motions, things started changing. So that's the only thing that I can assume. Now I'm going to get to the point to where if I want to start working on my case, I could probably go back and sue. So that's where I'm wanting to go.
Exactly. And, you know, like I said, you did some creative things. Just real quick, like I said, don't go into detail, but go ahead, Deanna, and tell us what you know, some of the things you're going to teach on and talk on.
One of the things that I did was I started searching for other women who had the same judge that I had. And the judge had either given the abusive father custody or had illegally placed the children into foster care. So at one point in time, she threatened to put a personal protection order against me, and I went on a Facebook page that we had for her, and I stated that I will invite the 100 mothers that you have screwed over. It was over 100. I stopped counting 100. It was probably 150. You know, I would invite those mothers to our court date. And if you wanted to walk in that courtroom with over 150 women that you have screwed over and think you're just going to walk out of that courtroom, you better bring some security with you. I called her secretary. I called her judge. I called the judge's secretary. I called the PPO office. I went to the PPO office. No, I've never been served. I went to the community conversation events that she was part of and got up and talked, and I was so mad. I asked a question about domestic violence and left, and about 2 months later, I ended up talking to this girl, and she said, you should have stayed. She said a argument broke out between the panel and the people in the audience, and I was like, I couldn't stay. I was too mad. And then they had another event that she was part of. It had to do with the county, and I was running for county commissioner. And when I walked in, she seen me and freaked out and left. And they came over. They had security next to me. They're like, we don't want any issues. I was like, oh, no problem. They're like, we're going to have the security guard with you. And it was interesting because that whole event, people talked about how, you know, people are scared to work with other people and the things that were going on. And other organizations don't want to work with other organizations because they're corrupt. They don't know what's going on. They know something's going on, but they don't really know what in the world's going on. And another thing I did was I joined my judge's church. I went and got the email addresses to people in the church and sent them an email address. And that was part of my safety. I actually had a safety plan that I had put in place because she had threatened to put my kids in foster care. She had threatened to put me in a mental institution. And so I put some safety measures in place in my case. So if you go on the website or the blog, we actually have what we're going to be talking about for the next 3 weeks, and we'll place those up there. And so next week we're going to talk about the shared custody issues that are going on. And then after that, we want to talk about lawyers' bad advice that they have given people. I'm actually going to do a free giveaway for people who send me in their stories. So hopefully we'll have some good stories to talk about. And then on the 24th, we were going to talk about behavioral health facilities, but we kind of reached on that tonight. So I think we might end up changing the one on the 24th to something else.
Great, great. Okay. And once again, if you have a question, a comment, or you have something to say, press 1 on your keyboard and we'll get you into the discussion. Those are going to be some great topics. We're working on getting some guests in for the next in some future shows. We want your input. We want your stories. We'll get you on the air. Do you have an email that they can get a hold of you at?
Yeah, you can always email me at tinacloister@gmail.com. Do you want me to spell that?
If somebody's got a pen, yeah.
All right, so Dina is spelled D-E-A-N-N-A, and then Cloistra is K-L-O-O, S is in Sam, T-R-A, and then it's at gmail.com.
Okay, and if you have people that want to get in on this team up, working together, other group advocacies that people work with, we definitely are open to working together and getting other organizations involved, and I will definitely get into some of the really in-depth work that Chris found out about the pro se and the pro per. Investigating of follow, you know, how to follow your attorney, maybe get, you know, run for an office, things like that. And we've got about 8 minutes. I do have to do a station identification. So, Chris, do you have any, you know, final comments or discussions that you would like to bring in?
I think the biggest thing is it's follow the money. I think, like Nina said, it's follow the money. You know, it's all about money. It's not. It's supposed to be about what's in the best interest of our children, but it's not. It seems to be what's in the best interest of lining these corrupt politicians' pockets. And I think that people need to start focusing on that. And I think people need to start focusing, you know, on what is best for your children. If you can get along with your ex, you absolutely should, for the children's sake. And the courts try to avoid that happening because they make money at it. So try keeping that in mind. You know, as you're listening to the show, please click in, ask us questions. You know, I mean, like we said earlier, we're not lawyers. We're not giving legal advice. We're just telling you some things that can help you out. And, you know, we can move on from there. Tell us your stories. Tell us what you got. Looking forward to talking to people.
And maybe we'll change that fourth week there to how to follow the money. You know, maybe you can tell us how you follow the money and teach us, you know, how you did that. That's one of my weak points. I know the law. I know the pro se issue. I know a lot of the statutes as far as enforcing your child custody and the steps to take to get that done, and not treat it as retaliatory, but as a get it enforced, because every state has an enforcement of child custody. If they're collecting 4D funding, they have to. Have a criminal charge of interference with child custody. So, Deanne, do you have any closing statements?
Nope, I'm good. It's going to be kind of hard to talk about how to follow the money trail, but I'll try and put something together because I kind of have a host system on how it all works together. But I'll come up with some things that we can discuss and talk about.
Well, I can help out with that. If people can... there's a video out there, and you have to buy it. It's $12 on Amazon. It's called Divorce Court. And if people would start watching that movie, and it's about an hour long, but I am telling you, that hour-long Divorce Court movie will tell you everything you need to know about the lawyers, about the judges, and how everything moves through there and why they're doing the things they do. That is a very, and if I could copy it and give it to people, I would do it in a heartbeat, but that would be infringement on rights, so copyright. So people, that is a very good movie to get, Divorce Court. So
absolutely. And I'd like to push Yahya McClain's just came out with another documentary of casualties of war, women in the regime. You're being used, people. That's all there is to it. You're being used. Your kids are being used. And we want to educate you on how they're being used. You've got 60 years of corruption taught to you. Uh, 60 years of brainwashing on CPS, Divorce Court. Maybe we can get Jeff in here to talk about the No Fault of Forest and exactly what that was all geared to. I mean, we're an open discussion panel, so get with Deanne and we'll schedule some shows up front. We wanted to do this first show to introduce ourselves, get everything going. Once again, we'd like to thank Brian Kinder, Randy Davis, Cheyenne Davis, and Neil Shelton for allowing us to use Future of Our Children's Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Also, these shows will be re-aired on todaysvoiceradio.net. If you want a quick shortcut to the blogs, you can go to the bottom of that website, and both blogs of Deanne's are in there. We thank everybody for listening. Again, would you like to close us out in prayer, and then we'll play a little bit of Love
Triangle? I personally would not. Dina?
Are you asking me if I would like to close with a prayer?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead and close with a prayer.
Oh,
it doesn't have to be
great.
It doesn't have to be great. It can be short and sweet.
Okay, I'm going to try and keep this sweet because normally I get a little crazy. And all right, so let's see. Heavenly Father, thank you for putting these two great gentlemen in my path and in my reach, and them reaching out to me so that we can put together this show. And hopefully we will be able to reach thousands and thousands of people, if not millions, and help them to understand what's going on with the family court system, maybe get some healing going on. And my personal favorite is for people to not think that they are the bad guy and that they commit suicide from this that's going on, because if there is one thing that really upsets me the most is when somebody commits suicide over the stuff that these people are doing, and my heart just sinks because I keep thinking if they only knew the truth and what was really going on, and if they became fighters and they were fighting this injustice that was going on, they wouldn't want to commit suicide, and they would be in the ring trying to help not only their children but other people. So, Heavenly Father, thanks for this show and for bringing all these wonderful people and the wonderful people that are to come on this show. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Good job. Love your kids more than you hate your ex, and we thank you for listening.
We're going to use that.
That, yeah. Love your kids more than you hate your ex.
Sitting on the front step, little white.
All right. Can you give me a call tomorrow? I don't know if we're supposed to stay on the phone. I don't think so. We did pretty good.
Southern Belle statue standing in the screen door, watching her whole world head for an old Ford, with a man that can look her in the eye. Then I write to him. Big hug, jump in, and I cry for her.